able to work it loose. Tip to the blue line and out, and that'll do it as the Hawks will win their home opener in 24 with an impressive 4-2 victory over the San Jose Sharks.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. We're having fun on this Friday morning. And that was fun last night at the United Center. Thank you to the Chicago Sports Network for that highlight, because the Hawks beat the San Jose Sharks 4-2. What a night it was, which brings us to our next guest, Kaylee Chelios, who is the studio analyst for the Chicago Sports Network, and she joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Kaylee. How are you?
Morning, Kaylee.
Good morning. Good morning, Ruthie. Great to be with you guys. Yeah, last night was a lot of excitement. Red carpet, another big win for the Hawks. It's been a fun start to the season.
So, Kaylee, we've talked about this a little bit as it has happened, but the first five games, I don't know that a week ago, as they got ready to go into Winnipeg, I believe, that we thought that the Hawks might be 2-2-1, playing as competitive as they have, looking like it may be a product that's a little bit better than people expect. You don't want to get carried away because it's only five games, but what's your level of surprise?
Well, I agree with you. I think you don't want to get carried away. However, I think it would have been very difficult for the Blackhawks if they did not get out to a strong start this season. I think that was important. And we didn't really see a whole lot of jam and a whole lot in the preseason, which at times maybe seemed concerning through training camp in the preseason. I don't think we really got a good taste of maybe what we were going to see to start the season. So I actually think they're better than what their record has been. And I really like the determination they're playing with. I think it took a couple games for some of these veterans. They signed seven new players to free agency to really get acclimated, feel comfortable. And I think we're starting to see their identity. They reminded me a little bit of the Calgary Flames in that they want to be a team that's structured, defends hard, forechecks really hard, difficult to play against, and I think they're sticking to that. We've seen consistency. That's something last season they strived for, and unfortunately on paper, and they just really didn't have the talent level to be able to score goals and create offense while playing in such a defensive structure. And I think they've done excellent to start the season so far. I think the game against Edmonton was a statement win. Just because it was early doesn't mean it didn't say a lot about where this team has grown in going to Winnipeg, playing 59 solid minutes, losing and only taking home a point in a 2-minute span. And then they come up and show up in Edmonton, take on McDavid and Draisaitl, and really whoop them. I mean, 5-2, but the Oilers were not in that game whatsoever. So I think they're carrying that momentum with them. And it's a really encouraging sign to see if you're the coaching staff.
And Kaylee, we know the Sharks are not great, and I've heard a lot of people compare them sort of to where the Blackhawks were maybe this time last year. Do you feel like the Blackhawks have sort of taken that step up from sort of the tier of teams that they were characterized in last season? Is it still too soon to kind of characterize that?
Probably too soon, but I'm with you. I think, yes, the Sharks are not great. I thought they were slow last night. They took seven penalties in the first two periods, which is going to make you play a lot of defense. They're tired. They really couldn't make much of a push in the third period, and it kind of threw things off. I think the Hawks were trying to find some rhythm in the third period after spending the first two, like I said, on the power play. They had 2 5-on-3s, held a 3-0 lead. And I thought they managed the game well. But yes, I think the goal, you know, if they can win between 10 and 15 more games this season than they did last year, that puts them out of that bottom five tier, you know, where the San Jose Sharks fell into last season. That puts them more where the Arizona Coyotes and Ottawa finished last season, and kind of gets them to that next level of, you know, when eventually they can contend for playoffs. Now, I think that's looking too far ahead. It's still very early, but I think getting off to a strong start now is important. When you look at how much, you know, Edmonton, Colorado, they were 0-7 combined to start the season. But as the season goes, teams kick it into high gear. Their superstars, you know, find their game pretty quickly. And it only gets more difficult after American Thanksgiving, and especially after Christmas, when teams start to defend hard and really ramp it up. So for the Blackhawks to get off to a strong start and start picking up points now, that's important to separate themselves into that tier. The other thing that stood out to me was their power play. They had one of the worst power plays in the league last season, and they're finding ways to score. It starts with Seth Jones, Connor Bedard, I haven't mentioned him yet, has been outstanding. He looks confident. He's play away from the puck, his willingness to play within this defensive structure that Luke Richardson wants him to play with and still make good decisions and find ways to create offense without sacrificing defensively. I think he's picked up right where he left off last season and then some.
We're talking with Kaylee Chelios, a Blackhawks studio analyst for the Chicago Sports Network. And you mentioned Bedard, and Kaylee, you were able to interview all of the players coming in on the red carpet last night. You did a terrific job. And I'm just curious, seeing him last year come into the league and having so much expected of him and handling that attention so well, so maturely, have you seen any changes, or how would you describe his personality in year two as he gets ready for even more attention if things go as well as people think? And how has he handled this any differently, or is he just the same old guy?
I think he's the same old guy, but I will say, I think last year coming into the season, I mean, he had spent the entire summer on national TV from the draft to the NHL awards. I don't know anybody who's 18 years old, hasn't been to the NHL and wins an award at the NHL awards. I mean, he was just in front of so many lights, cameras, and media. And then they start the season on that 11-day road trip, and it's national game after national game. So I think last year, I mean, he handled it so admirably, but it was a lot. This summer, he went back home to Vancouver, you know, had a relaxing, cool summer, did some hiking, skated, was at home with family. I just think he came in with a little bit more ease and not having to worry about carrying all the pressure. Last year, there also wasn't a captain, so I think there was a little bit more pressure that he put on himself to have to step up and say yes to every single media outlet and answer some difficult questions. That's where Nick Foligno really came in and helped him. But I think, you know, he's really cool. It's one of those things where, like, I'm 31. I still catch myself doing that. But I have three kids, and, you know, you talk to a 19-year-old, and we have very different things we do when we go home. But at the same time, there is a maturity about him that's just like you're just talking to another person that's, yes, he's 19, but he does have that maturity that is not common to find in people that age, where it just feels like a normal conversation and super relatable, great family. He's very close with his parents. His mom was at the game last night. And I think, you know, he's just had a really good upbringing. He was raised well. His sisters also stayed really close with him. She used to work for Lululemon, and they spend time together as well. And so I just think he's a really good kid all around, and he's done a great job at being so young, but also just put in every situation you could probably be in at that age.
We've kind of seen that a little bit too with his personality sort of relaxing a little, making a little bit more sarcastic comments and jokes like to the media. It's very fun to see him, because I feel like he was so reserved last year. And this year I do feel like there's a level of comfort and confidence, and, you know, that I think we're starting to see. And to that, Kaylee, I'm curious if there's, of all the veterans that were brought in this offseason to sort of shape Connor Bedard, right? Is there one that kind of stands out to you so far through these first five games that has made the biggest impact?
Well, I think Nick Foligno, no doubt, was his mentor. Nick does everything right. He's been a captain everywhere he's been. His dad played professional hockey for a long time. His brother plays professional hockey. He was born into it. So I think Nick, for him, you know, he takes the pressure off Connor. He helps guide him. He does everything right that you're supposed to do. So I think that's his mentor. But of all the new free agent signings, I think I'm biased. When I worked in Tampa Bay, I got to have Pat Maroon, and I interviewed him a lot. I think he's awesome. I mean, when I spoke to Wayne Gretzky when Tampa Bay signed him, and he was like, Pat is my guy. That is my favorite player. I love Pat Maroon. He's my favorite before Edmonton traded him. Pat, it just has a great way of coming into a room and keeping it loose. He has fun, works hard. He knows his job. He's consistent. He's got skill and hockey sense, but I just think he brings a calmness and ease. He can, you know, he can just step in. He doesn't necessarily always have to be the most vocal in the room, but when he does speak, it's impactful. And when things are going to be tight and the Hawks aren't winning every game, Pat, I think, always has the right things to say. And he does a really nice job at kind of leading some of these young guys where they want to go. So I think Pat Maroon coming in is awesome for Connor off the ice, especially, and just having a great mindset. And then obviously what we've seen this season so far on the ice, he's played with Teravainen quite a bit, and they seem to have some great chemistry. Teuvo played for Carolina, and you know, six consecutive seasons making the playoffs. So the skill, the hockey IQ, and the chemistry there on the ice is great for his development. And I think Pat Maroon has been a great addition from a locker room guy. And, you know, he's been solid on the fourth line.
He's a winner, too, Pat Maroon.
He's a winner. Three-cut Pat.
Crazy.
Let's talk about on the ice with Tavo, though, because I think when you talk about the power play, you see Tavo's impact immediately. And when you see the way that he surveys the ice and sees everything happening, he's not on the level of Bedard skill-wise, but he is definitely somebody who is special in his own right. And he is definitely a guy who had 6 years at Carolina, established himself as a pretty good goal scorer, and he's going to be a guy that puts the puck where it needs to be. What did you know about Tavo before the season, and what have you learned in a short time here?
I remember watching Tavo pretty closely when I was in college here in Chicago, just because he was on the, you know, Stanley Cup championship team, and he was a kind of a fan favorite. He was so young, but same thing. He was determined. He had great hockey sense. He could play with high-skilled players. He was effective. And I think I just continue to see him, even in Carolina. I mean, that's Rod Brind'Amour, and not unlike Luke Richardson either. I mean, he is somebody who wants his team to work hard, and they're so aggressive. They forecheck with so much tenacity. They're just go, 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 attack. So for Tavo, I think having a player like Connor Bedard with him is great, because they both think the game the same way, and Connor's always thinking two, three steps ahead. You can see that when he has the puck on his stick. He knows what he's going to do and where he's going to put it already. And I think Tavo's hockey sense gives him that edge, and it's great because Connor's going to need somebody too with how lethal his shot is to be able to distribute the puck to him at times too, especially on the power play. That's going to separate him. He's so good moving with the puck and creating chaos that way. Tavo just reads off that really well. He knows where to move. He knows where to be, and he knows that Bedard can pretty much get on the puck anywhere on the ice at times. So they had some great seam pass plays, some set plays on the power play last night, but I think he's going to be a pivotal part. Hopefully everybody stays healthy this season for the most part. Those two, I think that's going to help Bedard get more goals. He wants to be the facilitator. He's got six assists and a goal already this season, but he has such a great shot. I think Tavo is going to find ways to be able to create offense and get that puck to Bedard more than Bedard was able to last year, and not have to be the guy that's, you know, you don't want Bedard being F1 and going in on the forecheck to try to get pucks in the tough areas. So Tavo, I think, is going to be able to help Bedard get the puck on his stick more without having to chase the puck around.
CM Punk on the pregame show, Kaylee, your thoughts?
Yeah, that was awesome. I love wrestling. I went to SummerSlam back in the day with a couple of my dad's teammates, and I was a big Randy Orton fan, but that was the first time I've met CM Punk. His name's Phil, and he was really happy to be there.
His name is Phil.
His name is actually Phil. It's not CM. So it was great to kind of chat with him behind the scenes. And then I love his promo and how hype he gets for the Blackhawks. He's fabulous at what he does. And it's been a long time coming. He's been around for a long time, and I just never got a chance to really see him or meet him. But he's a big Blackhawks fan. Big Chicago sports fan. He's cool. So that was a really fun experience.
Kaylee, you know, you're the second Chelios to be on the show this week because your dad is a regular every Wednesday, 8:45. Seeing him last night reminded me to ask you this question. How did he stop aging? Because he looked terrific. The guy just looks like he could still play in a pinch if he necessary. And it's just like Chris Chelios never ages.
I don't know. I want the secret sauce. I feel like I'm starting to get up there right now. But he's got a great tan all year round. That obviously helps. Not all of us have those Greek genes, but he's a freak, to be honest. You know, every day he eats the same thing. He goes to the sauna. I mean, he used to tell us when we were kids, do 300 push-ups, 300 sit-ups a night, and you're gonna win it life. So he doesn't quit. He's routine with everything he does every morning. And he doesn't stop. I think that would be the end of him if he ever stopped moving. So he is impressive. And last season was a huge year for him with the jersey retirement. Yeah. And I just think he's carried all that this summer. It was a fun summer celebrating. Yeah. My mom was joking. I think we're celebrating dad like every weekend right now. I don't even know what we're celebrating, but it was just a fun summer. And he lives for life. I mean, he wakes up and he doesn't want to waste any time.
Great stuff. We love having him every Wednesday at 8:45. Certainly makes our show better. And we really, really appreciate your time this morning, Kaylee. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kaylee. Oh,
thank you, guys. Great to catch up with you anytime.
Kaylee Chelios, the studio analyst for the Blackhawks on the Chicago Sports Network. Did a great job last night on the red carpet because it was a fun event. It always gets a lot of attention. And, you know, you never quite know how these guys are going to be tight before a game, but it seemed like it was a pretty loose environment. She did a nice job.
Yeah, that's a cool event, and it was a beautiful night for it.
It wasn't it? And Chris Chelios does know everybody. He knows he's connected incredible. To everybody. Every week it's a fun segment. You never quite know what name he's going to drop next. And we're lucky to have him every Wednesday. All right, we come back. We'll wrap things up with Ruthie Polinsky here in for Mully. We got to get to baseball playoffs. We got to get to the NFL week 7. The NFC North has some big games. We'll talk about it all. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Feliz Navidad! Feliz Navidad! Acaba de empatar el encuentro la Navidad en octubre! ¡Qué bárbaro! ¡Qué monstruo!
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully. That was a Spanish language call of Jonkenzi Noel's home run in the ninth inning, the two-run shot that tied the game and sent it into extra innings, where they won with a walk-off by David Fry in one of the best ALCS games you're ever going to see. The Yankees come back-to-back home runs, Judge and Stanton, and then the Guardians tie it up, and then they win it, and it's history.
In Cleveland. It's just incredible. There's a video that's been circulating social media of a building, someone on their cell phone, just taking a video of the stadium
mm-hmm.
from a building, you know, maybe a mile, not a mile, but it's far away, and you hear the crack of the bat, and you hear the entire crowd just roar. And to me, it just, that encapsulates everything that's so romantic.
David Fry's had an unbelievable postseason. For a guy that has been unheralded, he was in the Brewers organization on his way to getting up to play for Craig Counsell one day. Then they traded.
Go Brew Crew.
God, you don't miss a beat. And then he was traded to the Guardians, and he played all the positions this year, first and third. He caught for 26 games, outfield. And David Fry, now a Guardians legend in the making, because if they win this series somehow, I don't think they're going to win the series, do you?
Mm-mm.
I don't think that they have enough. This is their moment. I think they can enjoy it, but I don't know that it's going to be something that the series is 2-1. You know, there's a shot. But I think the Yankees are going to be the team that emerges from the AL. And I think the National League, as you pointed out, is lopsided.
All but done.
That's a one-sided Dodgers over the Mets. Both teams today. Well, game five is today. Dodgers and the Mets. And then the Yankees and the Guardians. It's one of those things where you don't really expect the Mets to come back because they sort of have had their moment.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's fleeting.
It ran out. They ran out of juice, it feels like. And just the way that the Dodgers are beating them, it just feels so lopsided.
They got a day game today.
Really?
Mets and Dodgers. They play this afternoon.
4:08 our time, 5:08 Eastern.
Isn't that crazy to do?
Well, they're sticking really two games on because this is the trouble with the 2-3-2 format, yeah. Right? No days off.
Grow the game. Put the games middle of the afternoon on a Friday.
What's not the middle of the afternoon? 4:08's not the middle of the afternoon.
5:08 Eastern.
5:08 Eastern.
All right.
Trying to get
who
two
works
games
on Fridays
the
anyway?
Not starting at 9:09 Eastern.
Okay, I want to ask a baseball fan question. Did it bother you that when we go to extra innings, as we did yesterday in the Guardians-Yankees game, that it's totally different than during the regular season when you have the ghost runner, the Manfred man, at second base. You don't have that in the playoffs. We have two different rules that...
I think that's a smart move.
I
because
like
it's the playoffs.
It.
So much is on the line.
Think about other sports too, like in the NFL, overtime rules change.
Great point.
Remember Kyle Shanahan didn't know the rule. Never forget.
I guess, but it's totally different than the regular season. I guess it is different than regular season. You don't want to go back to having no man on second because these games end quicker this way.
It's just the overtime, the extra innings. Those are the rules that change. Nothing else is changing, right? It just creates a different.
I guess they do the same thing in the NHL.
Three on three
becomes full-fledged overtime. Okay, I'll come off that.
It's all right. Quick. We talked it out.
We did talk it out.
Feeling better now.
It kind of bugged me last night because, like, these are different rules.
But I think, David, I think you would have a really great point. If that game went 14, 15 innings and now they're playing again, to your point, in the middle of the afternoon and neither team's got a bullpen because you've used every guy up, now that's a problem because now the quality of the game is not going to be as good.
Yeah, fair enough.
I got your back.
Back to the Bulls. They are in action tonight. Final preseason game, finally, at the United Center. Lonzo Ball, he practiced yesterday, the day after he came back for the first time in 1,006 days, 33 months. He played 15 minutes. Maybe he plays 15 more tonight. That would be great. Billy Donovan did not attend Bulls practice because of an illness. They are back in action right here on the Score, 6:45 with Chuck, Bill, and Alyssa Bergamini. That will be worth watching. Also, tomorrow night on the Score for college football fans, Georgia and Texas. The game of the week in college football nationally, 5-1, right here on the Score at 6. I think Texas is going to win that game. I don't think it's going out on a limb. It's in Austin. If it were in Athens, it might feel differently.
I agree with you. I was just checking on the Bulls to see if there was any information about starters playing tonight and what that's going to look like.
They played all their starters the other day. What do you think? They're going to go tonight with a bunch of subs?
I think the Bulls put out a graphic, and not that I know this for a fact, but the Bulls put out a graphic of, you know, back in action tonight, game day, and it's not the starters on that graphic. So
now, who's at the forefront of the graphic? All right, a lot of subs. I don't think they need to play anybody. They open up next Wednesday against the Pelicans, correct, in New Orleans, so you don't want to risk anybody getting injured or tweaking anything. And let's face it, if you can go into the regular season with a little bit of momentum, your last time out, you played together. They had seven guys in double figures. Zach LaVine was hitting. Kobe White was playing well. Everyone really played well. They hit 18 of 41 three-pointers at the pace that they choose and now that they're going to play at. So I could see that. I could definitely see that. Bulls back in action. A lot of good college football stuff. We are going to be at the Chicago Sports Network at 5:30, Ruthie, for the Big Pro Football Show. And on the way there, between now and then, we'll only be asked probably 727 times about where they can watch the Chicago Sports Network. So to let people know, it's on the back page of the Sun-Times this morning. It is a big topic of conversation. You have a new network. And people can't get it. A lot of people can't get it in the Chicago area because there's not a deal yet, a carriage agreement with Xfinity, the largest carrier in the marketplace. And the thing that you consistently try to tell people is that there's confidence it will get done. It would be somewhat, I don't want to say unprecedented, but certainly unexpected if it didn't. Mm-hmm. And it would be unfortunate. And this is part of a negotiation process that hasn't gone maybe according to plan, but it's what happens when you have a difficult negotiation phase, and this is what we're in the midst of.
And I think it's worth noting that you and I have no control over what's happening that's above our pay grade, so yelling at the talent and the people who are just going to work and trying to do a good job does very little, but that's okay. But what I was going to also say is that it's also from multiple people, and the antenna is a very cheap and easy thing to do and set up. And I know it's an inconvenience and it's maybe not, but in the meantime, while you're waiting for this, it's on Amazon. It can be at your door tomorrow and you plug it into your TV, you scan the channels and boom, there you have it. So for people who are looking for ways to watch these games while and our programming.
And depending on where you're hearing this and living, and maybe the antenna doesn't work great. Maybe the antenna doesn't work at all. Sometimes it works well. That is an option. It maybe not your only option, but it is a good one. And it is affordable. So there is an over-the-air component that is free. It won't be like that forever, we don't think. But you're right. Social media, there's going to be an element of screaming and complaining.
At us.
And in general. Yeah. If it's not about you can't find the show, you can't find the network, it's going to be about something else.
And that's okay. We can handle it. We're tough. I think we want you all to know that when you do watch us, it's a great product and we're really excited about it. And
it's a lot of fun.
We think it's going to be great. We're having a lot of fun.
They're off to a good start in terms of content, in terms of the production. The game last night on CHSN, they did a terrific job with the live action. And so Bulls games, Blackhawk games, you're not seeing a product that's inferior. You're seeing something that is really well done. And hopefully, you know, in time, Stacey King was very optimistic on X and Twitter in his feed about what's going to happen next. And you just have to be patient and hope for the best. The NFL never sleeps. So that's a big weekend in the NFC North. It's a big weekend. There's some great matchups as the Bears stay home and Bears fans have an opportunity to see a wide range of games. Chiefs and 49ers Super Bowl rematch. Sunday night, Jets and Steelers, if you want to see Justin Fields hold a clipboard.
And Devontae Adams playing with Aaron Rodgers.
The debut of Devontae Adams. He's likely to play a lot.
He is. And it looks like from all the media interviews and everything they're doing, they're inseparable. I mean, it looks like they're in every room together. They're maybe having sleepovers. I mean, this is like maybe they're cuddling and, you know, all those things. But
Spooning.
Spooning. Yeah, spooning. There could be. Who's Big Spoon?
I don't know. But I'm not sure. I think that Devontae Adams is pretty.
I think
pretty
he's big presence. Spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Devontae Adams is Big Spoon.
And at this stage of their careers, they aren't going to be as effective as they were at Green Bay. And I think the expectations are going to be somewhat outsized. And I think the Jets have spent the season falling short of expectations. I'm not sure that changes. I'm not sure that changes just because Devontae Adams arrives. Aaron Rodgers suddenly looks like he's 30 again.
Right.
That was an underthrown ball, regardless of how the route was run. It looks like Aaron Rodgers has lost a little bit of his fastball. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, you can't deny it. And I just don't think that the problems are all solved with one person, one player. I think it's bigger than that. It's deeper than I don't think it is solved by firing the coach. I think there's a lot of bigger issues. And it does start with the quarterback who does seem to be coming off an Achilles injury, and he's not 25.
Bills, Titans, Jets, Steelers. Which new wide receiver in the AFC East makes the biggest impact this weekend? Amari Cooper with the Bills or Devontae Adams with the Jets?
I don't know how much the Bills are going to need Amari Cooper in this one, but I do think that the chemistry between Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams is predetermined. It's established. It's there. I think that's going to be an easy place for them to pick up Amari Cooper and Josh Allen. I think that's may take a little bit more time and his familiarity with their system.
Monday morning, the Bears will wake up, I think, feeling pretty good about their place in the NFC North, because I believe that the Vikings might lose to the Lions, and I think the Packers could lose to the Texans. I would expect that to happen. The Texans, their defense and edge rushers travel well. I think C.J. Stroud will be the Packer defense is going to try to harass and force him into mistakes. I'm not sure he's going to make many. I think he will have a good game. If the Packers lose and the Vikings lose, I think that's the best-case scenario for Bears fans.
I agree with you. I don't feel as confident that Green Bay is going to lose that game. I don't think the Texans are going to beat Green Bay. I think Green Bay is, their defense is also quite special. That's a kind of a trademark now of the NFC North, are these incredible defenses. And I'm just not super sold on the Texans. Four of their five wins have been one score games, and not all of them have been to great against great teams. The one game that they won by double digits was against the New England Patriots, who we all know are at the bottom of the NFL tiers. So I don't know. I'm just not super high on the Houston Texans train quite yet.
If you're doing power rankings in the NFC North right now, oof, how do they go?
Power rankings? Power rankings. Who's surging?
One through four. Who do you think the best teams? We're entering week seven, and you have to do power rankings for the NFC North teams. How do they stack up in Ruthie Polinsky's list?
Wow.
There's no doubt about number one, is
there? Number one is the Detroit Lions.
All right.
In my book.
I'm with you.
Number two, I think this is hard for me because this is hard for me. And I think also we have recency bias. The Vikings had the week off. It's kind of, I think the Viking, can I do a three-way tie?
See, that's a cop-out.
It's hard.
That's a cop-out. If you, all right, so power rankings are based on projections. If you're projecting out, I don't think the Vikings are going to be.
You think they finish third place?
They could finish in fourth. I really believe that they have a chance. They could finish in fourth.
Someone,
if the Bears could get on a little bit of a roll.
Someone laughed at me when I said that the Vikings were going to miss the playoffs.
But you had me thinking about it then. And when I laughed at you, I scoffed so sarcastically.
So now you're telling me I'm right.
Okay. I thought I overreacted to it. And I started to look at the schedules and I'm like, you know what? They might. They might. Because I think it's rooted also in when you start thinking about Sam Darnold being either compromised because he's not as been as consistent as a quarterback as people expected, and also the knee injuries coming back from, which showed no structural damage, but you wonder what that might do to him. I am more skeptic than believer in the Vikings.
Yeah, I think I am too. I think I'm concerned about Green Bay, right? Like with Jordan Love's injury, he's getting healthier by the minute. Like they, to me, are trending upwards. The Bears trending up. The Vikings, I do see tapering off. The Lions, I could see. It's just going to be interesting to see how teams play the Detroit Lions. What I think is also really interesting, as we saw this last year too, where the Bears split the series with the Lions, probably should have won both of those games. That's a really good matchup for Chicago. And I'm just interested. I just cannot wait for NFC North play. And what's crazy is that the country can't wait for NFC North play.
I think the Bears should want to wait. They need to get better before things toughen up.
Excited.
Yeah, you're just excited for it. The next three games are all winnable for the Bears. You don't want to get ahead of yourself, but they can beat the Commanders. They certainly should feel like they could beat the Cardinals, and they should feel like they should take care of the Patriots easily.
And we were talking about this in the break, too. I love that the Commanders are playing the Panthers this weekend because they're going to be riding high coming in.
You want to play a team off a win rather than a loss.
Correct. And they should beat them handily if they are who we think they are, right?
Now I sound like Dennis Green. That was the anniversary of that game the other day. We celebrated that one too. That was a lot of fun. That was the Dennis Green game back in 2006. That was the 18-year anniversary of the Dennis Green rant the other day.
Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their.
Thank you, Brian.
But they are who we thought they were.
And the Bears are who we think they are.
No.
No?
The Bears are. Well, when did we think what? You know, like week one?
I thought they'd be 4-2 right now. I thought they'd be 4-2. And here they are taking the weekend off, watching the division foes battle amongst themselves, and wake up Monday morning feeling pretty good about the direction. All right, Ruthie Polinsky was in for Mully. We will do transition when we come back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.